We are back, everybody. It might be a long one today. Get ready. I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, head out of the Del Real, here with my partner, Mr. Nick Hodge, who's also an investor and the publisher of Daily Profit Cycle. This is the 350th episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro Worlds, the world we live in, folks. We're going to talk about markets, record high gold prices, record high silver prices, record highs everywhere. We have private American citizens pitching a new Gaza to Davos. Man, everything must be awesome everywhere. I think the world's problems have been solved, right? Unless you're a five-year-old brown kid going to school, or a Palestinian, or Renee Good's family that cares about her and her friends. Other than that, everybody else seems to be having a blast out there. Nick, how are you and your beautiful family doing?
Gerardo, I don't think I need therapy anymore. I think I need an assistant, because it's getting tough to keep up out there with everything you just mentioned. I put a couple of conversation topics on the sheet that we use like 2 or 3 days ago, and I feel like they're already outdated. I looked at it today and I was like, that feels like it was a month ago. Everybody's doing great, approaching a busy weekend. As you know, we'll be in Vancouver for the Metals Investment Forum and the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference. Hope to see some of you there. My family, the rest of my family, is going to Seattle for a cheer competition after Portland just a couple of weeks ago. And we're welcoming a bunch of new readers, which I wanted to make sure I mentioned off the top, because we're raising the price to this podcast very soon. It's been a year since we started selling it at $99 a year, and it's been very successful. The things that we've discussed and revealed, and certainly that the premium portfolio picks that you get along with that $2 per episode subscription have been well worth the money. So we're doing a campaign for you guys to join the paid version before the price goes up at the end of this month. And many people have leapt at the opportunity to do that. So we thank you and we welcome you. How are you, Gerardo?
I am well. Look, it's still the price for Bizarro World will still be the equivalent of, you know, a cup of coffee per episode, a very inexpensive cup of coffee given inflation and the rising cost of inputs around the world. I am well. Look, my beautiful wife still loves me. You know, that's always a great box to be able to check. The kids are still healthy. Our oldest gets married in March. Look, family's well. Things are well all around. Health-wise, we're all well. Definitely a lot to be thankful for in the Del Real household. Let's get to the markets, because if I start with warrantless searches and Renee Good's autopsy and a number of other things that we'll get to eventually, we're going to be here for a long, long, long time, and we still may end up here for a long, long, long time. But let's get to the markets, because look, we have a historic market in front of us. We've been trying to position ourselves, family members, friends, subscribers for many, many years. And it's one thing for us to kind of see what the trend was. It's one thing for us to look ahead 5 years and say, you know, the Dow is going to hit record highs along with the gold price, along with the silver price. I can't explain to you how or why, but I could see it lining up, right? It's a whole nother thing when you're sitting here and you're looking every day at the markets and the major indices are clear, near or at all-time highs. Gold just breached $4,900. It'll likely be $5,000 by the weekend, because the market loves round numbers, right? Silver's at 96. I think we touch 100 by the weekend. By the way, the weekend, I'm talking about one more day, folks. I'm not, you know, we record this live on Thursday, obviously, for those of you that are watching the premium portion. So I'm not giving myself like a 7-day hedge here. I'm saying in a day, I think like overnight we'll pick it up. And so it's definitely historic in nature. We're finally seeing some of the equities start to rip, and we're seeing it in many, many markets, the tin market, the lithium market, uranium, slowly but surely. And I'm telling you, watch the lithium sector, because uranium is up next. Watch those equities. They're starting to respond. And that spot price, which is the least important of the two, right? The contract price is the most important one. But that spot price is quietly left around the $87 level, approaching 90. It's all happening simultaneously. And yeah, sure. Look, man, it feels good to look at the portfolio and feel like, you know, we did some smart things. And it feels damn good to look at the bank account and feel like we did some smart things, things that may have seemed really risky a couple of years ago, in hindsight, look like no-brainers when you're sitting on, you know, however much I don't want to be that guy, but however much in warrants Nick and I are sitting on, it's not inconsequential, right? And that's coming off of like 3 or 4 amazing years. So I say all that to say, let's not confuse brains for a bull market, folks. We have a bull market. Let's try to use our brains a little bit to be practical, logical, and get as much as we can from this historic time in the world where no one alive has ever seen these metals prices as it relates to gold and as it relates to silver and most recently as it relates to copper. Your thoughts on the velocity of everything?
It's moving very quickly for multiple reasons, right? I guess I'll start with the market and then go into politics. You've got a tech sector
that's... It's not even politics anymore. It's crime.
But, it's crazy. Yeah. You've got a tech sector that's softening a bit. I mean, look at a chart of like Netflix, for example. It's that's one of the FANG stocks or the Mag 7 or whatever, right? And it's at 52-week lows. So despite the stock market itself still being at all-time record highs, and so you're getting a broadening of that bull market, which I was telling you was going to continue in late last year, October, November, December, no recession, was saying expect new highs in the new year. And they're being driven by other things like... we were talking this week at our staff meeting about things you can drop on your foot. And if you look at the sectors of the S&P, it's things like obviously materials, which we'll talk more about in a second, but industrials, for example. I mean, we've got to build out now these things that we've been talking about. And we've been talking about this for a number of years, as you said. We're going to Canada, so it's easy to skate to where the puck is going. We're actually going to be at a puck drop on Sunday with the Canucks. It was easy.
I hope they let me back in the U.S.
It was easy. Oh, that's interesting. It was easy to see that they were going to need the raw materials to build all the things that were driving that tech bull market, right? And you and I kept saying, like, you know, eventually they're going to need the copper and all the things you just mentioned, the tin, the nickel, the zinc, etc., to build all these things. You asked about the velocity. It's still a very under-owned sector, especially the precious metals. And so, and again, I sound like a broken record, and I told you this last week or a couple of weeks ago. I feel like, not that I don't want to, but it's like, I just feel like I say the same things over and over, and they just continue to be true. Money, it only takes a little bit of money migrating into the precious metals sector, which is small when you stack up the entire market cap of all the miners against some of those tech companies I just mentioned that have multiple $1 trillion market caps. And so, yeah, I mean, the bull market is unfolding. Capital continues to come in. We can see that by the amount of capital raises that the companies were involved with are doing. You and I have conversations with executives who are talking to family offices and high net worth investors and even tech billionaires in some cases, and doing road shows to the Middle East and to New York, where folks who aren't and haven't been in the space are starting to open up their wallets in size. And so, yeah, I mean, it's happening almost across the board in all the spaces in which you and I dabble. And you're right. We're at a place now where no one alive and no one deceased has ever seen these prices because they're all-time record highs. And so a lot of talk about an island in the North Atlantic over the past couple of weeks. And in some cases, we're in uncharted waters. I don't think we need to talk about Greenland. I don't think that plays into our hands. And I don't think it's hugely important at the end of the day. I just wanted to make the uncharted waters comment.
Greenland, Iceland, you know, block of ice, an island in the north, whatever, right? It hard to keep up. And I think that's the intent. And we'll talk about that here in a little bit, right? What comes next, Nick? Look, again, it's easy to feel good about the triple and quadruple digit gains that we have. And let me say this for those of you that are saying and thinking possibly, and we have a lot of new subscribers to this and our other services. So thank you first off for coming on. A lot of you are going to feel when you look at Nick and my portfolios and you see 100%, 500%, 1500% gains, you're going to sit there and you're going to think, I am late to this party. There's no way I'm investing in a market that already has had those types of gains, because traditionally when you see that, it's a good sign of a top, right? If you're sitting there with 500, 600%, 1500, 2000% gains, 200, 200, 100, you can look at that and say, that's a frothy market. And I am here to tell you what we told you last week. And it bears repeating, especially to newer subscribers. This is a structural bull market. We're in structural deficits with a lot of these metals. These are problems that will not be solved on the supply side overnight while the demand is increasing exponentially. This run is going to continue for many years. And believe you me, both Nick and I will be in Vancouver. I joked about them letting me back in. I'm halfway serious about that on the way back. But we'll be in Vancouver and we're booked from like 8 a.m. to like midnight, right? And yeah, some of that is like a hockey game, but that'll be all business. Believe you me, some of that's dinner and drinks. It'll be all business during dinner and drinks. And so it's going to be a busy conference, but there's so much value in being able to vet new ideas and have those face-to-face meetings. And that's really, at the end of the day, aside from like Nick's speaking engagements, which are great, it's the vetting of new ideas. And to those of you that are subscribers of Private Placement Intel, accredited investors that have been using the service, thank you. And look, obviously it's worked out well for everyone. To those of you that are new or are accredited and thinking about picking up one of those limited slots, and I think we're down to like 65 or 69 or something like that, I would get that done because Nick and I are continuing to vet deals and teams. And I'll give you, and I'm going to hog the mic for a little bit, Nick, but I have to. I'm going to give you one story and then one example of a deal that we're working on right now. The story goes to Nick's point about new capital, big capital coming into a small space, right? And we were doing a webinar for a company earlier that we'll talk in the premium portion of the podcast about, but we were doing a webinar with this company, getting into the guts of, you know, the geology and the capital markets. And the gentleman, the CEO, shared a story. He said he was in New York pitching the company with a guy. He said it was the wealthiest guy he'd ever met with, some guy that's worth, you know, some $100 billion or something like that. And what the guy shared with him when he took the meeting, he said, I'm meeting with you because I'm curious about your company and I want to write bigger checks when you become a bigger company, if you make it. But I'm worth, you know, whatever I'm worth. And I'm taking $1 billion of that and starting my own private family office dedicated just to mining. And this is just one guy. He's a tech guy who happens to be in New York, who just, he's going to peel off $1 billion. Like, you know, they used to peel off $100 bills in Goodfellas, one of my favorite movies, right? And just start his own little private mining fund and see what a little cutesy $1 billion does for it. Believe you me, his competitive A-type personality friends aren't going to look at whatever this guy's name is and say, yeah, we're just going to let him do that. They're going to peel off their billion. And that's the kind of capital that's coming into the space now. It's early in this market, folks. So that's my first story. The second is about a deal that we're vetting right now. And I won't give too much away, but this gentleman that we've known for over, I first met him 15, 16 years ago, but he's very well known to a mentor of Nick and I's and a mutual friend of ours. And he reached out to him. He said, hey, I got this gold antimony project in Australia. So immediately me, I'm going, love gold, love antimony. Australia just set up a $1.2 billion critical metals fund, largely focused on antimony. Take my money, right? And I know who this guy is. So I know it's a good story because I know their due diligence process is top notch, but I wanted to hear more. So the guy goes to our mentor and he says, well, I've been offered to raise money at, let's just say 5 cents, right? Let's say 10 cents. I've been offered to raise money at 10 cents. And our mentor shoots back and says, well, I'll raise it at 7.5 cents. And this gentleman's reply was, why would I raise it at 7.5 cents with you when I could raise it at 10 cents over here? And the answer is because those guys are going to sell your stock in 4 months. Every shareholder they're going to get in there and every dollar they write is going to be a play on the warrant. And in 4 or 5 months, you're going to be calling me, asking me to help clean up the stock because you're getting a sell-off in it, regardless of how well you're doing with the company. And that's worth the 2.5 cents that I'm asking for on this deal. Us bringing the shareholder base that we bring, us bringing the long-term approach that we take, us being able to help market a story and tell a story to our audience, and the many years and decades that we've spent building that brand up. There's an inherent value that maybe is not obvious to all, but it's certainly obvious to those that know what we do and how we do it and how hard we work and how passionate we are about it. And so, you know, that's a deal that we're doing some final due diligence on, that if it comes across the finish line. I am so excited to bring to everyone. And I say all that to say, we're not done with good early stage deals. This is going to be done at a market cap of $6, $7 million, folks. And I guarantee you, the minute, you know, people's names get put on it that are going to be involved, including us, it goes much, much higher. So look, we're still working hard. We're not confusing a bull market for brains. We'll take the bull market for sure. And be damn sure we're going to get the most out of this market that we can get. But it is early, folks. I really want that message to come across. You are not late to this game. This party started at 9 and it's 10:30. They're barely getting their first drink in. The music's just starting to sound right. Like, the pretty girls are just showing up early in the party. So get on board and let's dance, everyone.
Just thinking about Night at the Roxbury there. It started on my head there. You asked what's next. I think there's a lot of things that are next, and we have a good reader question later that we'll talk about some of that. But I'm with you. I think it's early. You mentioned the gentleman with $100 billion. That's still sort of the smart money, right? That is starting to get positioned. That's the early money. You're not in that place yet where everybody's talking about it, where it's every headline in the newspaper. Yeah, you're starting to hear more about it, but, like, you know, I think I just saw Joe Wiesenthal. He's a huge follow on Twitter, yeah. Bloomberg guy, just starting to, like, screenshot the gold price, right? And he's one of the, you know, quote unquote leading analysts or leading media voices at Bloomberg, right? So still very early. Let me just continue down that thread for a second. Haven't seen the equities outperform yet. That's only started really in the past 3, 4, 5 months. You're still seeing the metals prices themselves go up and get the bulk of the headlines, not the equities get the bulk of the headlines. That stage is still to come. I think you still have an M&A cycle that's going to come and drive prices higher. For the past couple of years, the producing mining companies they've been making more money because their underlying commodity prices have been going up. And now they're going to be making even more money because those prices continue to go up while inflation is abating a bit, right? Like, oil is still cheap. Their costs haven't gone up as much. And, you know, I've talked to some other people, and I'm sure you have too, that are excited to do or redo their economic studies, PEAs, feasibility studies, because they can now use a higher metals price, and some of those costs have remained the same or have only gone up a little bit, not commensurately with the prices. So those miners that I just mentioned, you know, they've raised their dividends, they've done share buybacks, etc. But soon, their shareholders and their boards are going to demand that they secure the next round of growth and production. And you see some of them starting to get ready. You've obviously seen the bigger deals, right? With the Techs of the world and now the Rio Tintos and the Glencores, right? And you've seen some of the shedding of non-core assets from some of those bigger companies. Soon you're going to see the quality pre-production, production ready juniors and developers start to get some eyes on them from some of those larger companies. So that's that. Now I'm going to hog the mic because I posted a sticky note to my monitor while you were talking with some things I wanted to say. You asked what's next. I'm not a huge crystal ball guy. What I've learned is to take it as it comes. And so what's next for me is capital rotation, keeping an eye on some of the winners that have gotten outsized or very large weightings in my portfolio. And you and I do things a little bit differently, but taking some of that and, yes, exercising the warrants that you already mentioned, which we have significant upside in now. And also taking some of that and continue on your theme is putting it into new deals, right? Because, some of these winners that we've had, like you were mentioning, up 500, 600, thousands of percent in some cases, yeah, they can continue to go up. Sure. But I don't, first of all, you know, I say all the time, they don't grow to the sky. And yeah. Two, I'm sort of a scale out guy. And again, we got a good question on that in a second, but I'm taking some of that capital and putting it into those new gold antimony deals that you just mentioned. Speaking of gold antimony, by the way, and how the years fly, you were telling me before we started recording that Perpetua is nearly a $50 stock. So
$48, $48.20 as we speak. Man.
You know that we're living in a simulation, and I was looking at my phone last night before I went to bed, and if you have an iPhone, you might know that on like one of your screens, I'm not that tech savvy, but like you'll have like featured photos, right? It'll like suss out good photos of your family or landscapes or whatever. Well, one of the photos was me on a walking tour with like a giant caricature of my head above me at a Vancouver Resource Investment Conference. The phone obviously knows that I'm getting ready to go to Vancouver, I'm sure. And so it served that photo up to me. And I was like, let me look at that real quick. So I looked at it, and first of all, my beard was much redder than it is now. There's more gray hairs in it because it was back in 2019 before we had known about COVID, in fact. And I was like, man, that was whatever. What's that, 6, 7 years ago? And we've been doing this now almost 20 years. So, and then I looked behind me at what I was standing in front of, and I was standing in front of the Midas Gold booth. And Midas Gold then was trading for a consolidation adjusted $9 a share. And we just said it hit $50 a share. At that time, it was pretty hard to tell that, not to tell the story, but to attract investment to that story, to get permits for that story, to get funding for that story. Antimony what? No one knew what antimony was, right? And you and I and others were telling folks like there is no other source of antimony in the U.S. It all comes from China. We've got to secure our supplies of this stuff. It's critical for military and defense stuff. Is this narrative sounding familiar? Because it's what you're starting to see in the headlines every single day now. And so all Midas has done since then is got its permit, got money from multiple federal agencies, including the Department of Defense, changed its name to Perpetua. It has the chairman or largest shareholder. I don't think he's the chairman, largest shareholder in John Paulson. And I'm sure you've seen has gotten full write-ups in Bloomberg. Like John Paulson's got himself a critical metals play. It's a critical metals play now, Gerardo. It's gone up 80% a year since I was standing in front of it with my caricature head. And it's now dual listed, and it's got a big board listing in the United States. And still, there's no antimony production in the US because it's only now under construction, right? And so we're going to need a lot more of this stuff. One other thing I wrote down on my thing is I do buy under prices, right? So I just
It's
finished
funny,
writing
I
my.
call them buy up too.
Yeah, so
That's how Nick and I differ.
we do similar but different. That's right. It's good.
Call it different things.
And every week I go through and I look at the holdings and I look at the charts and I see what's worth buying. And I'm looking for consolidations, right? Because you don't want to chase things, right? Yeah, they're likely worth more, but that's not the way the market operates. Again, trees don't grow to the sky. So you need to look for consolidation levels, chart patterns, and be smart about not chasing, but yes, averaging up. Or if you're new to the sector and you don't have anything to average up into, initiating new positions in a smart way. Do it on down days. Do it during consolidations. I've been saying for a year now, the entire metals complex is now in a buy the dip market. Whereas before, after the COVID checks and everything, when the S&P and NASDAQ were going up 20% a year and likely still might, I don't know. That was like a meme, right? Oh, buy the dip, buy the dip, buy the dip. And now that's the case in the metals as well. So and now the shameless plug part, if you don't know how to do that or you need somebody to help you do that, that's what we do. And it's not just us, there's 10 other speakers at the Metals Investor Forum this weekend. There's dozens of other speakers at the Vancouver Resource and Investment Conference. So find one that resonates with you, find one that you can sort of understand their process, I've been around this world long enough to know that there's some people I just don't jibe with, right? I mean, you find someone who speaks your language or you understand the
Most
language
people,
they're speaking. Yeah,
in my
for sure.
case.
But anyway, so that's it. Long answer to your question about what's next. I don't know what's next, but I do know how I'm going to manage whatever comes to me.
Yeah, I want to say this for those of you that are looking at $5,000 gold and $100 silver and go, you're saying to yourself, you're going, there's no way that this can continue higher. Consider this. Chinese-held U.S. treasuries are at an 18-year low. And I'm sure you can draw a conclusion and speculate where some of that capital is going. So they're selling dollars and rotating some of that money into gold. Now, guess how many more of those dollars they have to go? $680 billion more in treasuries. So I saw a good thing, and I'll have to shout it out because it was on X, Twitter, whatever it's called. I think it was Katusa Research. And the point that Katusa Research made was when the government and the central banks are the ones driving the price higher, that is not a sign of a blow off top. That is a sign of them realizing where the value of their currency is going and hedging it in an aggressive way using gold and to some extent silver. And so for anyone that thinks that this is the top and there will be pullbacks, and we've told you this, every time there's a pullback, buy the pullback, right? Especially in the equities, because the pullback, say if you get a 3% down day on the metal side of things, you might get a 10-15% down day in the equity, especially the smaller juniors that I gravitate towards. So again, it's early days, folks. It's just kind of what I'm trying to explain. And there's a lot of party left, man. The beat just got going. So get in the game and any questions. And we had a good one here that we'll get to in the premium portion once we get through the bizarro part of the podcast. Please write in. We love the questions. We love the comments. And we try to respond to every single one that we get in a timely manner.
I might share my screen for just 1 second if I can do it fast enough, not the stallest.
No, do it. I could blab in the meantime.
No, I can do it. Here I go. There it is, CRB Commodity Index. So CRB Commodity Index here. We've said we were in a super cycle starting from right here. Let's draw some lines because lines are fun. So last commodity super cycle started in the 90s. It went up to here. You can see there were fits and starts along the way, right? And then it retraces because that's what natural resources and commodities do. They are cyclical. It went all the way down to its base. This is a triangle, as my first grader has learned. It has three vertices. and then a new super cycle kicked off amid the money printing during COVID, amid the checks getting mailed out. And we started a new super cycle. You can see where this thing would be going, right? And you can sort of see where we are here just in the middle of it, right? In fact, you're having a sideways consolidation. It's pulled back a little bit from the highs of 2022. This is the CRB Commodity Index, a basket of, I believe, 12 or 16 commodities. So halfway through it, barely halfway through it, as you say, Gerardo, the music's just starting to sound good. So maybe that gives you some context of where we are and likely where we're going to complete this commodity super cycle. I haven't shown that chart in a long time, but look at that. You still have a good entry here. I mean, halfway up the ladder. So a long way to go, I believe, for sure.
All right, let's get to the bizarro portion, unless you got anything else you want to get off your chest. Look, folks, lithium, uranium, copper, gold, and silver all look fantastic. Tin looks fantastic. Yeah, fire.
Just one more thing. So
yeah, take your time.
You mentioned the dollar. You mentioned the government's knowing where their currencies are going. I would state for the record that every fiat currency has gone to zero against gold throughout the history of humanity. And we continue to run up the tab, right? So that's the one thing I wanted to mention. Like, I just saw Trump, that's funny. I just saw Trump tweeting in the past couple of days that we're going to increase our military budget, right? We're gonna buy more things. I don't know where he's going to get the medals or the money for all that, but they'll put it on the tab, right? Because what's the phrase now that everybody says? Nothing stops this train. The deficits will continue to run up. The debts will continue to run up. We're going to be at $40 trillion soon. And Trump does socialism by a different name, right? And he does money printing by a different name. Remember, Gerardo, people are getting tariff dividend checks. We're sending out warrior checks. That seems like a lifetime ago, but he hijacked all the major networks just a month ago to talk about the warrior dividends or whatever.
You know
the
where
fuck
that came from, right? It came from their housing budget.
That's incredible. Incredible.
Their housing budget. So he took money from their housing budget, the warriors, the military servicemen. So he took the money from there and said, I'm giving you a warrior check because I love you so much. Ain't I the best?
What ball is the cup under, Gerardo?
Yeah.
One of the other things I saw recently that someone was asking me about on the Twitter is the $200 billion that he wanted for mortgage-backed securities and restricting institutional buyers. You know, this is meddling in capitalism. This is still a bastardization of capitalism, just under a red tie instead of a blue tie. They do it in different ways, but they all do it. Like, where do you think the $200 billion comes from to buy mortgage-backed securities? Put it on the tab, right? And what does that do to the dollar? It creates weakness. What does it do to the bond market? It makes people demand higher yields and send bond prices down. And what does it do to the precious metals market? Well, it attracts more capital because people see cracks in the system amid that rising debt, et cetera. And so, I mean, yeah, all kind of stuff out there to like if you're a precious metals investor. And you got to sort of really put on your glasses to see that they're all the same, man. Like, they all do the same thing at the end of the day. They just do it in different sort of ways. And so the guy was saying on Twitter, he was like, don't you think this is at least a good use of government debt to try to get mortgage rates down for folks? And I was saying, perhaps, I don't really know, but what I do know is that it's government cheese and that it still attracts rats, right? I mean, it's meddling in the system and it's more fuel for the precious metals fire. So that was just the last thing I wanted to get out there.
No, it's funny. I was going to bring it up under a different with a different angle, but I'm glad that you touched on it. I was going to talk about the rant that I had like 3 years ago about BlackRock buying all the homes and, you know, how that was predatory capitalism, right? And now we're talking about it from another angle, which is corporate socialism. That is what it is. Let's get to the bizarro part. Look, I told you all a few weeks ago, and I tried to word it in a way that didn't get me in trouble, that I didn't know how many of you had ever shot at someone or had been shot, but that despite all the polarization about the death of Renee Good, whether you hate that she was a leftist or love that she was a liberal or hate that she was lesbian or love that she was a leftist, whatever your political tribe is or however you identify, let me be clear, I dislike both parties with very few exceptions on each side, and consider myself more of a libertarian. And so whichever way you lean, I told you a few weeks ago that if you saw the trajectory of that bullet, there's no way that you could surmise that that officer was in grave danger. And then I told you that the next two shots clearly came from the driver's side window. And so what we learned through an independent, that's an important word here. It wasn't a Republican autopsy, and it wasn't a Democrat autopsy, and George Soros didn't fund it, and neither did Israel, right? This was an independent autopsy. What they found was that there were three gunshots, that the first gunshot pierced her here, and that the next two were to the side of her head and her face, and that the next two, the ones after the car moves past the officer, were obviously the kill shot. So she was shot, I believe, shoulder, lung, side of the face were the three locations. What we learned from the autopsy report and the medics is that after she was shot, she bled out with a heartbeat for 8 minutes. Despite the fact that there were doctors there, physicians, citizens that happened to be physicians, yelling at ICE to please let them administer care. 8 minutes. And I don't know what you all call that, but if you did that to one of my family members, I would treat you as a murderer. So I don't know how you all would treat it. And I don't know how you all, that is, maybe it's second degree murder, because yes, you know, she did veer towards him. You could argue that she was trying to veer in the other direction. You could argue that she, well, you couldn't argue that. This is true. This is based on body camera and audio. She got conflicting commands. One guy saying, get the fuck out of here. And the other guy saying, get the fuck out. Right? So, it, by the way, that's a tactic. I'm not saying they did it intentionally. I'll say it happens often in these kind of cases where body cam audio is available, and which is kind of curious. What we can't argue about is that the two kill shots came from the side after that officer was not in any kind of danger. And that they let her bleed out for 8 minutes. That we can't argue. And I don't care about your political party. I don't care, you know, how you identify. I don't care what pronouns you use. I don't care who you donate to. We just can't argue about that. And to let any human being bleed out for 8 minutes with physicians there wanting to administer aid. Nobody administered aid. It's fucking criminal. That's it. That's my rant on that.
Well, the system is rotten, Gerardo, as you know. And gosh, I don't even know where I want to start. So let's start with what I was telling you 2 weeks ago, I guess it was now, when we first got back on the air after the holidays. This police officer or ICE agent, of course, will not be charged with second-degree murder or manslaughter or anything, frankly. I mean, it's going to be viewed as a justified shooting. Whether it was or not is not what I'm saying. I'm saying sure. The system is set up in a way that he will be condoned or blessed, or it will be accepted that he used justifiable force. And we've seen this time and time again. You mentioned the conflicting commands. There's a very famous video of a kid who was shot in a hotel hallway by... Yeah. By officers. And I remember watching that video, and yeah, they were yelling different stuff with him. And he was saying, "I don't know what you want me to do. I don't know what you want me to do with my hands." And while he was doing that, they shoot him to death. Right. And so
that's on his knees, right?
Yes. Yes, sir. He was on his knees, and they were down the hallway from him, and he was unarmed. But that's par for the course, as I was telling you, and it happens in not just in ICE. It happens in police precincts across the country, and has been happening now for over a decade. I've been talking about these sort of incidents since I founded the Outsider Club, which was 13 years ago at some point. And it's the rottenness of the system. One of the things that has really unnerved me this week is the there was an order from a federal judge in Minnesota saying that, ICE had to stop encountering or assaulting essentially. Yeah. Peaceful protesters. And I scratched my head, and I was thinking, why do we need a federal order for this? You're allowed to peaceful protest. You're not allowed to attack a peaceful protester. That's the First Amendment. And then I saw just yesterday that was overturned. They're allowed to mess with peaceful protesters. And I'm thinking, it's just beyond unconstitutional, right? Like, you have a First Amendment right. And at some point, folks are going to start exercising their Second Amendment right to uphold the First Amendment.
When you're done,
right?
Can we talk about the Fourth? Because they're going through all the amendments.
I'm getting there, man. Yeah, with the warrantless searches, because of course you need a warrant to enter someone's home. This isn't war. You can't do whatever you want. You can't stop and frisk people and ask them for their papers. I won't mention the Gestapo because everyone does that. I'll just mention the Constitution because it says that you don't have to do that. Now, listen, I get that. I saw the press conference this week from Mr. Trump holding up the pictures of rapists and murderers. And like you, Gerardo, I want those people off the street as well. But the level of hypocrisy when the federal government and the Justice Department is shielding rapists and pedophiles and et cetera by not releasing the Epstein files. And we know many of the people who are involved with that, when they point at folks and use the logic, or they use the, it's not logic because it's not logical. They use the argument, oh, what do you want to stop ICE from deporting these rapists? It's like, look, if you were really against rapists and pedophiles, etc., you would lock up your brethren and your ilk who are clearly guilty of some of the same crimes, right? And so that might be
the
end of my rant.
They're pardoning them. Correct. Epstein files, we're going to protect them. And if they happen to get caught on their own merit, well, got to pardon them. And you can't lie. I mean, you can't tell me things that are just true and then call it a lie, right?
Yeah. One more thing. Sorry, I did have maybe two more things.
No, take your time. Said my piece.
I saw this week that the police officer, who's actually Latino, by the way, the police officer that was on trial for not going into the school in Uvalde to help those children as they were murdered by a madman, he was let off without charges because... there's a former cases, I don't remember the name of the case, but I've talked about it on this podcast before, that ruled essentially that the police really don't have a mandate to serve and protect you, right? Your best interests aren't in mind. And the reason I bring that up is because he was found not guilty, let off scot-free. All those children died while those brave cops stood outside the classroom and scrolled on their phones. You remember that footage, I'm sure, Gerardo, from all those years ago. And
for an hour and a half, they sat there.
It just
city.
Yeah, it just breaks my brain to know that that's the way the system is, that these tough cops, and I'm lumping them all together now, right? I know that he's Latino, but I'm lumping together the police and ICE and yeah. everything, because when real danger is present, when real people and children are dying, they stand outside. But when someone is peacefully protesting and exercising their First Amendment rights, they're content to bear spray them in the face. Like, you fucking pussies.
That is a fact. And again, let me be 100% clear. I don't care if you're Latino. I don't care if you're black, white, Asian, country bumpkin, hoodie as all hell. If you're doing a great job enforcing the law, we support you. And I don't care if you check any of the boxes I just mentioned. If you are corrupt, abusive, ignoring the letter of the law, fuck you. Get arrested and, you know, I'm leaving to Canada, so I'm trying to be careful with what I want to say and how I want to say it here. But we are all for law enforcement, immigration enforcement, as it's supposed to be. What we have right now is not that. I had some dumbass on X say, do you know who Obama, who deported more people than Trump's immigration head was? The same guy that's Trump's. Nobody complained then. You dumb motherfucker. You know why they didn't complain then? Because they weren't getting five-year-old kids from the school and sending them God knows where. They're trying to find that kid as we speak. They picked them up from the school. Department of Homeland Security had the nerve to come out and say, oh, the father was an illegal, so when we went to arrest him, he ran and he abandoned the kid. Eyewitness accounts say that's absolute bullshit. There was a family member there. It was during school pickup. Whether or not the father was illegal, if he was illegal, deport him. There's laws for that, right? But you don't then take that baby, and that's not an arrest. You can't arrest a five-year-old, the little animated backpack on. Days later, we don't know where this kid is. This is the fourth kid, ages 5 to 14, that they do this to. That is not immigration enforcement. That is not targeting the worst in our communities. Everybody's for that part. The fraud. Everybody should go to prison. You want to poison our communities, you know, with fentanyl and meth and all of that. You should go to prison. He just pardoned the son of a guy that was doing 8 years in prison for selling meth. Complete pardon, a year into the sentence.
Son of a congressman. Son of a Republican congressman.
Son of a Republican congressman. And if he was the son of a Democrat congressman, I would be just as unearthed and unhinged. Because you mean to tell me that little five-year-old boy, God knows what he's thinking, deserves to get that kind of treatment. And meanwhile, at the highest levels of office, at the presidency, they're pardoning meth dealers. This ain't it, folks. This ain't it. And this is not a critique of America. This is how we make America better, and then we get rid of the bullshit, and we unite behind that front. It ain't partisan here.
There's a reason I haven't voted for president since 2008. It's interesting you bring up Obama. I was going to bring him up as well, and I would have said the same thing. Like, he was doing the same thing. I'm not saying that guy on Twitter was right, but yeah, Obama deported all kinds of people, right? The other thing, the real thing I was going to bring up about Obama is that there was a story that came out this week about Obama's White House counsel. Her name is Kathy Ruemmler. This lady, who was President Barack Obama's White House counsel, was acting as a key advisor to Jeffrey Epstein during some of his most perilous moments. I'm reading this from the article. You know who Obama's White House economic advisor was? It was Mr. Larry Summers, right? The gentleman who had to recently resign in disgrace because of his connections to Jeffrey Epstein. And so they're all one in the same, and it gets worse than that. Governments, royal families, Israel prime ministers, obviously Trump has been documented on the plane, right? And they sit up there this week in Davos with their expensive travel and meals, and they look down on us and the rest of the country and tell us to we need law and order, while they and their small groups are doing the same thing. And then it spills over into Wall Street, because do you know where Miss Kathy Ruemmler is now counsel? She's the top lawyer at Goldman Sachs. And so, and the revolving door continues to revolve. It's one of the reasons we started this podcast some 350 episodes ago. They are rotten. This is what my tweet said. Rotten. All of them are rotten. Obama was rotten. Trump is rotten. Israel's rotten. The British royalty is rotten. The Wall Street elite are rotten. They're all fucking rotten.
And they want us to get on the street and fight with each other about partisan politics, folks. Do not fall for the okey-doke. It's a ring of straight-up pedophile protectors and abusers. And that is what I am against. It doesn't seem that controversial a takeover here. The Board of Peace. The Board of Peace. President Trump has announced the Board of Peace. And to join this board, you just got to give them $1 billion, right? And then you get favors, of course. And then I'm glad that you bring up Obama, because one of my critiques, he did some good things that I agree with, but he did a lot of the stuff that I don't agree with, like bomb brown countries back to the Stone Age. And
five of them. They gave him a peace prize, though.
That's why I was saying he should join the Board of Peace. It's only $1 billion, baby. Your old girl from Goldman, I'm sure, could raise that money and make it a tax write-off for you. You guys can go hang out again, because everybody looks real chummy when they get together behind the scenes. So, yeah, it's nasty. One last point, and then I'll leave it there. There's a new Gaza. These motherfuckers aren't even done destroying the current Gaza, right? The Palestinian people have had 90 to 95% of their critical infrastructure, meaning homes, hospitals, universities, but places of worship. Shit, they're fucking up Bethlehem or whatever that one was. One of the most historic religious buildings in the history of the world, right? They're destroying that as we speak. But they're not even complete with that. And there was a really good news article, and I wish I had it, but the article basically said it was from somebody that saw Jared Kushner, who, by the way, is a private citizen, was out at Davos pitching the new Gaza, and he had these beautiful slides of what it was going to look like. And it's a $25 billion investment. And the article goes on to point out that it was absolutely clear that phase one was killing as many Palestinians as they could, and phase two will be gentrification, like the 5 to 10%. That end up surviving and making it if they don't starve them out, because the World Health Organization can't be there and Doctors Without Borders can't be there and food isn't allowed to be there. And oh, by the way, they just murdered three journalists, one that worked for CBS News. I'm curious to see if they cover that, with Barry Weiss's ass over there now front running everything for her owners that be. You won't hear a lot about that one in the next coming days. I promise you that there won't be like a in memoriam to that guy. I'm almost sure of it. But yeah, we got a Board of Peace in a new Gaza. So again, it's gravy in a beautiful world for the people that are doing the oppressing. The people that are doing the oppressing are raping and molesting and killing and arresting your babies, y'all. And I don't know why all of us can't unite around that. And we can get back to partisan politics maybe after we kick the fucking pedophiles and abusers out. And maybe after we get government that wants to implement the law equally. They're shredding through the Constitution, one amendment at a time, hoping you don't use the second one. I'll leave it there.
I keep it in arm's reach, as you know. My pocket Constitution. Two things are on my list before I forget and they disappear into the ether. Everything you just said is true, and they're getting rich in the process. A few weeks ago, I told you Congress was going to vote on banning themselves from owning stocks. And I said very tongue in cheek that, oh, man, I'm holding with bated breath that they're going to stop themselves from owning stocks. Gerardo, do you think they voted in favor of banning themselves from owning stocks? Of course they did.
Don't hold your breath.
Of course they did not, Gerardo. In fact, they rewrote the bill a little bit to insert things that would allow them to reinvest dividends into new stocks, and also just to let their spouses and family members trade freely on their behalf.
Why not? So while we're at it,
there you go. And then the last thing I wanted, you were talking again there about the pedophiles, is my new hero, and I should look up his name, the gentleman who yelled pedophile protector at the Ford factory. He needs much more airtime, and it's just par for the course that this guy has already disappeared from headlines. I mean, how brave, how awesome is it to yell at the president of the United States, pedophile protector, while he's touring your place of employment?
how weird is it that amongst like thousands of workers and people, Trump heard that, turned around and flipped them off? Think about it, folks. If somebody yells pedophile protector in a crowd, I don't turn around and flip them off. I look to see who the fucking pedophile that they're talking about is. My natural reaction isn't to turn around and flip people off that yell pedophile protector. So, yeah, I'm with you, man. The whole thing is rigged. Listen.
So hold on. The gentleman has been suspended from his employment.
Of course he has.
There was a GoFundMe created for him that has since been shut down, not allowed to raise any more money. Don't know how that happened. His union, because he's in an auto workers union, of course, says that they believe in free speech and they're going to fight on his behalf. But we'll see. But at any rate, good for that gentleman.
Every month, and then we'll get to the premium portion of the podcast. Every month, Digest Publishing, one of the companies that Nick and I own, we donate 1% of our sales to a charitable cause. Of each employee gets to decide every month their own individual place that they want to donate, right? And we're proud of that. I mean, we're coming up on I think six figures of donations, have not surpassed that, and increasing every month, thankfully, right? But I might have to break my streak of where I typically donate to Nick. And if the gentleman's GoFundMe, you know, if he ends up suspended or fired and the union doesn't get his back, we might have to send a little bit of money his way. Anything before we get to the premium portion? Because I do want to get to a very, very good question that was well asked and give it the time it deserves, which should be probably about 9 or 10 minutes or so.
Yep, let's do it.
Beautiful. So look, let's get to the premium portion of the podcast. I am Gerardo Del Real along with Mr. Nick Hodge. This was the 350th episode of our weekly therapy session we call Investing in Bizarro World. We'll talk to you next week. We'll be back with all sorts of, I'm sure, goodies and nuggets, pun intended, from Vancouver. Take care out there, folks. Be safe.
See ya.